Hello and welcome to the Pace Yourself podcast with me, Jamie Nolden. This podcast is all about real life stories of people who have found running to be a powerful tool in navigating life's challenges, whether it's from mental health, sobriety, weight loss, or just coping with everyday struggles. It's all about inspiring others and showing how powerful the simple act of running can be. In this episode, we meet Staffan, a 53-year-old runner who's made running a lifelong pursuit. From setting a sub-3-hour marathon, PRs, to losing his best friend, Staffan's journey has had its highs and lows. After facing burnout and loss, he's returning to run with a new mindset, aiming to keep his 10K under 40 minutes while finding peace in every step.
Hey, welcome, Staffan. How are you today?
Thank you very much. I'm fine, thank you.
Good. Welcome to Pace Yourself podcast.
Thank you for having me.
That's all right, not a problem. So, obviously, you know, the podcast is for real people with real talk, and it's really to know your story. So, how did you get into running? How did it inspire you? Was it through, mental health struggles or any sort of crisis that happened in your life?
Well, there was nothing in particular, really. You know, growing up in Sweden in the 1970s, I was always quite active as a kid, as I think most kids were at the time, as compared to now, especially. There were no smartphones, there was no internet and so on. So, you know, I went cross-country skiing, I did bicycle everywhere. I did other sports activities, ice hockey for a period of time, and you know, so on, just like most kids do. But I was never really any good at running growing up, and I never really enjoyed it either, but I did it, you know, on and off as part of other training. So, but I did it not very often, not very regularly, but I went out for a run every now and then. And you know, I remember growing up, a classmate told me once that he was a football player and told me he had ran 14 kilometers one night, and I just thought, well, that is just insane. I can never do that. But
I'm not even there yet. I'm nowhere near that. I'm only like literally at 5K. So this story for me from you is going to inspire me and get me right into your level.
But I guess the first time I guess I started running regularly, you know, I was in the military in 1991, and I did, before that I heard, well, there's a lot of running, there's a lot of training, so you better get fit. It's much nicer if you're in shape. So I just did maybe, I don't know, 4 to 6 months before that, I started a bit more of regular running maybe 2 to 3 times a week. And I got quite fit. And so when I was in the military for like 8 months, I was actually, you know, the guy that everyone wanted to beat, because I got a little bit good at running. And I also actually, during that period of time, for the first time, I actually started to enjoy the running itself and training.
Okay. So with the starting running of your journey, what initially drew you to running and how did that love evolve?
Yeah, I mean, looking at my running now and the way I have been running since, well, actually, I started running the way I do now, although it was on a little scale to start with. We got our third child, my wife and I, back in 2006. That was our third child. And then I felt, you know, I'd like to have a couple of times per week that is just my own time to do whatever I want to do. And you know, I just felt, why don't I just go out and run? Because it's efficient. I just, you know, as the saying goes, you just need a pair of shoes and you can run anywhere. And that's, yeah, it's quite true. It's very available. It's very efficient. So I went out for a run, you know, a couple of times a week on a very small scale, you know, running 30 to 40 minutes. And that was back in 2007. Since then, I haven't really stopped, actually. I found out that I enjoyed it already from the start. And I found out, you know, after a while that I really enjoy this. You know, I have a friend of mine that lives in Gothenburg in Sweden, and he said to me, come down to Gothenburg where I live and run a half marathon together with me. That I had been training for about 6 months, and there is this half marathon in Gothenburg, which is the largest half marathon in the world. So we did that as a activity, him and I together. I said to myself, well, it would be fun if I could run this half marathon in 1 hour 45 minutes. So that's like 5 minutes per kilometer if you're in intermetrics, or like 8 minute miles if you're in the empirical measurements, I guess. And I did happen to run that half marathon in 1 hour 44 minutes and 59 seconds. So that was kind of fun.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but later that fall, I ran another half marathon home here in Stockholm, and I without actually training more or training, doing anything differently, I suddenly ran 1:32. And everything I remember from that race is just me smiling and not fighting at all. Just, it was an incredible experience.
So you were getting the runner's high while running.
Yeah.
I've only experienced this after, because normally I'm concentrating solely on my breathing.
I mean, it's long ago now, so maybe I don't remember the struggle, but I guess it was there towards the end of those races as well. But I just remember that I thought it was great, and it was a wonderful experience. So I just kept on going, and I started to improve a bit, and you know, I built my mileage a little bit, and it's just been ongoing ever since.
So with, obviously, you started running, what, regularly 2007. So
yeah,
you obviously had the pandemic impact. Did you?
Yeah, 2007. I mean, the pandemic came, what, in 2020?
So was you running from 2007 up to then?
Yeah, I am. Exactly. No, I started running regularly in 2007, and I haven't really stopped since. So it's just been, with the first year was very little, then I increased my mileage a little bit the year after, and then from maybe 2012, my mileage has been fairly consistent, running about 50 to 60 kilometers per week.
So you're looking probably around, what, over 15 years of consistent running?
Yeah.
So what drives you to maintain that incredible streak? I mean, how do you keep it enjoyable? I mean, because a lot of people I know, they run for a bit and it's gone. They fall out of love with it quite, you know, straight away. And now I know you have said that you found yourself to be quite good at running.
Yeah.
But there's still that mental challenge. So what is it that kept you going all that time?
Well, I think it's several things. You know, I ran my first half marathon already the first year. And then I tried the marathon the year after. I thought it was quite horrible because I wasn't prepared for it. I did the mistake of setting a time goal for my first marathon, running 3:30, which I didn't do. I ran 3:41. So after that, I always tell everyone, don't make the mistake of setting a time goal for your first marathon, because it's much better and much more fun to cross the finish line being proud than being dissatisfied that you missed your time goal after running for 42 kilometers on asphalt.
Yeah. So have you ever walked during a marathon, or have you just been a constant runner?
No, I did that the first year, and I was stupid enough to set a tougher time goal the second year, the year after, and I didn't make that either. So because I ran into the famous wall after about 30 kilometers or 32 or something like that. So, but then I said to myself, I went home and I said, I'm never going to run a marathon again. But after a while, you know, I started to think it must be possible to do this in a better way. So I came back to the same race the third time, and then for the first time I met both those goals, and I was able to run a slight negative split, and I felt strong all the way until the end. So that was kind of something.
That's so amazing.
That was a different experience back then. That was 2012. So yeah. And since then, as I said, my mileage has been fairly stable. But then I had my best season in 2014. But I've kept a fairly stable level up until the pandemic, really.
Right. Okay. So yeah. Obviously, when we spoke before, you were saying about you had quite a tragic moment in your life, didn't you? The loss of a very close friend.
Yeah.
Would you mind sharing that?
Sure. This was in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
In the spring, in March, I had a best friend for 10 plus years. His name was David. We were very close because we had so much in common. You know, we were about the same age. We had kids in the same age. We lived on the same street. We were for the same company. And we were also runners at the same level. So we could, you know, train well together and enjoy running together without ever, you know, competing with each other. So we ran a lot together. We had our, while the kids were small, we had our early Sunday morning runs together, where we just went out and, you know, talked about life and running and everything. So a very nice, friendly, thoughtful kind of guy. that really enjoyed, you know, the small things in life, going for a hike, going for a morning run, et cetera, et cetera. But he was, at the same time, he was, you know, struggling with a terrible work situation, and he was also struggling with depression that he had had in the past growing up. And so, and he just got pushed more and more into an overworked situation and with a lot of anxiety. And obviously, you know, I knew he was struggling, as we talked a lot during our, about all sorts of things during our runs, as we have been so close for years. But ultimately, he took his own life in the beginning of March 2018. So that was, I'm talking to his wife, he got into some kind of sleep deprivation. So it must have been some kind of acute episode that happened those last few days. But it was a kind of harsh winter, and we didn't really meet that much the final weeks, because he liked to go cross-country skiing and more than I did. And I remember I had a cold at the time. So there were a couple of weeks where we didn't really train together. But I remember seeing for the last time that, you know, there wasn't really any sparkle left in his eyes. So he was just, he had sort of, you know, burnt his candle in both ends, so to say, that dressed up well.
Yeah. So, I used running to get over grief. That was my main thing, as you know, as I've told you, you know, with my dad. So did that spur you on more to want to do it more, or was it a struggle to get back into that?
I think, thinking back at it, I think my immediate reaction, I think, was one of a acute sorrow and maybe disbelief at first. And I think I was left in that state for maybe a couple of weeks. But I remember still going out for runs, but they were all the same. I didn't care about pace or distance or anything. I went out just to move for about 30 minutes of just very easy movement outside. I actually remember crying while running.
Yeah,
those for a week. So, I log my training online on a very active Swedish running community, and I have quite a few followers on that site.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, people began to sort of react and asking me how I was online, because they noticed that my training looked different. There were just these short, easy runs, and there was no intervals, no tempos, no thresholds, no, you know, what have you, that I usually do. And I usually also write, you know, a few sentences in my training logs on how the run has been. But now I didn't do that at all. So it was different. But I got out almost every day because it felt really, really good. And I just let the thoughts, my mind wander whenever it needed to go, you know?
Yeah. So you just naturally let it just take its natural progression. And help.
Yeah.
And it's so nice that you mention about the running community, because I'm finding everyone I'm speaking to on the podcast is saying how supportive other runners are. They really do notice if something's not right, or they check in on you and stuff, you know, and that's such a great thing. And I remember you mentioned to me about you're quite a dinosaur when it comes to technology. Where you've still got it's like a blog, isn't it, online?
I've written a running blog in Swedish since 2009. So and when blogging was quite a thing, maybe 10 to 15 years ago, it had a lot of readers and still does to some extent. Mm. But I've always enjoyed writing, and you know, writing about running, it's been an interest of mine. So I still keep on doing it, although not as often as maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So many I have written about this also on my running blog, and I've gotten a lot of sympathy and a lot of nice reactions, and people have approached me. And I don't really, another effect of this is that I don't really shy away from, you know, more difficult conversations, perhaps the way I did before.
Mm.
I'm quite open to, you know, willing to talk about more difficult things as well with other people.
Yeah.
And I think that's something we need to do in talking about mental health, and especially perhaps us men, we're not that good at talking about these things as compared to women, I think, in general.
Definitely. I'm the worst for it. It was only really till, like, I've said before, my wife basically threatened to say, "Look, if you don't get help, I'm going." And she's far too important to me to lose. So I had to take that step. I didn't want to. To be honest, I sat outside the doctor's just thinking, no, I'm not going to do this. But I went in and got the support I needed. We are stuck in this world of
we are
alpha male.
Yeah, for sure. And we must talk about more about how we feel and why. And I think it's very, very important. But going back to that year, you know, I usually enjoy, you know, the competing and the racing aspect of running because well, I am a sort of a goal-oriented runner, but also I also enjoy it for the camaraderie because you meet running friends, you get to hang out with people, etc. But that year when after David had died, there was I did a few races for sure, but it wasn't the same and it wasn't important. I ran basically for, you know, for mental health, for just getting out there and move, because it's the movement in itself is so important. It's for the well-being, I think. But I also remember a bit later on that I started to perhaps I questioned my running a bit, you know, if I started to wonder, is it that important to me? But I found out it is, so that's why I kept going. And I also asked myself, you know, would David have wanted me to give up running? And of course he wouldn't. So, but there was this gap of having, you know, someone to run with. So I have a couple of other running friends, but it's not the same because, you know, David and I were so close. We were runners at the same level. So running with other people hasn't really been the same. Which is why I joined a running club nearby to where we live. I tried to sort of get some more company on my runs and joining some club runs, and which has been a good thing also socially to make some new running friends there.
Yeah, and that they are hard to come by, aren't they, running friends? I mean, I think with you, yeah. Especially ones that where you've done it with all your life, because it's the same pace. You know when one's struggling, when not. So on and so forth. So it is definitely a hard thing finding new running buddies.
And I think I had this conversation with someone and I actually found it interesting because we both agree that it's easy to come close to someone while you're running. And perhaps that's got to do with the simple fact that you're not sort of opposite to each other, looking in each other's eyes all the time. You're both, you know, running side by side, gazing, looking forward. So then it's easier perhaps to talk about, you know, personal stuff. It's the same really as when you sit in a car and talk to someone. You have your eyes on the road, right?
Or a church. If you're speaking to a priest, it's, you know.
Yeah.
Confession, as they say.
That's not an environment I'm very used to, but I guess that's true as well. But you know, so it's you don't have to look a person in the eye that much. Maybe that makes it easier to come close to someone. I don't know.
But that's a great way to think about it, because you know you have got for people listening, if you've got a friend out there struggling and you have a runner, and then get out, because it's a lot less face to face. You're all focusing on the end goal to get where you need to get, and that's such a lovely way to look at it.
I met him, David. I mean, today I've struggled with, you know, the performance at work and mental health, and also being diagnosed with depression in the aftermath. But today it's been 6 years since David died now, and he's still with me on my runs. And I sometimes when I go trail running, down to our local 10K run that we did a lot. There is this rock by the water, so where we sometimes sat down and had a chat. And I sometimes, you know, sit down there on that rock and just looking out of the water and thinking of him. But that also there's also this, you know, extra element now of gratitude. Actually, I mean, just thinking of, well, I'm still around. I'm still being able to run. I'm still here. I get to see my kids grow up. He doesn't do that. You know. And I just don't take it for granted the way perhaps I did before. And so I try to enjoy both my running and everyday life much more now as compared to in the past.
I think death can do that to someone. It's very it makes you appreciate what you've got. Like after my dad, you know, left me, it was very. I sort of just went into this slump, but then I thought, he wouldn't want this. He wouldn't want me to be. He would want me to live my, you know, my best life. So that's when I thought, you know, I've got to do something. And thankfully, you know, running helped me start that and got me moving forward and helped with our mental health, definitely.
Yeah, but obviously, I'm by no means a saint or something like that. I still fail often, you know, and. My kids and my wife say that I'm grumpy and that I complain about stuff that's really not important, and that's true. But I mean, generally thinking, I think I'm grateful for so much more now, and that includes also my running.
Yeah, I'm the same. It's opened my eyes. You know, I'm sort of now since that's happened, I don't look at what I haven't got. I look at what I've got. And I'm very grateful for what I've got. And, you know, if something else comes along and is, you know, adds even greater, and then that's brilliant for me. But I appreciate everything I've got now. And that's the way I'm trying to live my life, because it seems a lot less stress-free. Instead of worrying about what that person's got, what this person's got. I mean, with your blog and everything, and obviously, you know, the things that's happened in your life, have you not thought about a book?
I have, actually. And I guess it's just the laziness that prevents me from doing something about it. But because I do enjoy writing, as I said. So it has definitely, and I have some, I know some people that has sort of realized this dream, or actually written the book, different kinds of books, and that's been really, really inspiring. So maybe one day I'll make a final decision and actually do something about it, not just dreaming about it.
Yeah, I'd like a signed copy, please. Yeah,
yeah. That can be arranged, I guess.
So obviously, moving forward, obviously you had that terrible year, and obviously we didn't really have the greatest couple of next years, did we, as a human race, really, with a pandemic?
No, we didn't.
Yeah. So with that, how did that affect you with your training and stuff like that? Did that?
Yeah, I had this idea because, I mean, we spoke about running my. I ran my first marathon back in 2008. I broke 3 hours in the marathon in 2012. I had my best season 2014, running 2:50 in the marathon, running 36 minutes for the 10Ks. And I continued to perform well 2017, 2019. But then the pandemic struck, as you said. And, you know, even though in Sweden we had less of a lockdown as compared to many other countries, all office-based people like myself started to work entirely remotely, and I did as well. So I thought, well, here's an opportunity to train a bit more, you know. Well, let's see if I can finally improve just a little bit further and maybe get closer to those results that I did back in 2014 when I had my best season. So I started running a bit more, going from maybe running 5 times a week to running maybe 6 days a week, or some weeks running every day. It wasn't a massive change, you know, but I increased my mileage slightly. You know, and because mileage, if you've been running for a while, you read about this truth that the easiest way to become a better runner is to run more. So I think a lot of runners are obsessed with mileage, and I try not to, but I fall into that trap every now and then as well. So I started running a bit more. If I a normal season run between 2,500 kilometers, what's that, 1,600 miles or something, then I up my miles to maybe running 3,200 kilometers, or maybe 2,000 miles. So it was a little bit of an increase, but that little increase just pushed me over the edge into some kind of overtraining.
So how did you, so could you share how you identified the overtraining?
It was really tangible, because all of a sudden, well, it wasn't like the switch of a button, I guess, but I just remember looking back at it that I had trouble both pushing the pace, all the intervals and all the tempo runs. I simply ran slower, although the effort was harder. The heart rate wouldn't go up. I had severe difficulties pushing my heart rate up. And the pace was just slow, and the legs were just screaming to slow down, stop it. We're not cooperating here. The legs were just unwilling to run for most days. And I kept harder and I kept harder and I kept on pushing and pushing and pushing, but it just didn't work. And you know, going from, if I think it was in the summer of 2020, I ran 37 flat for the 10K. So I remember doing this little 10K race during the pandemic. It was actually towards the end of the pandemic, I think. I didn't even break 40 minutes. So I ran like 40:30, and I came to the conclusion that I got to do something about it. This isn't doable anymore, and most of all, it isn't fun. Running isn't fun anymore. I've always enjoyed running. Now I don't enjoy running at all. So I I decided, to cut back on it a little bit again and be very strict about taking 2 days a week when I don't run. And slowly, I'm seeing some improvements again. I'm not back to where I was pre-pandemic, but I'm slowly getting there again. I'm improved slightly, and most of all, my legs are fresher. My heart rate is behaving as it did before the pandemic, mm-hmm. and I just enjoy it more. Legs are fresher. It's more fun to run.
Yeah, those rest days are so important because I never knew about rest days or stretching, anything like that. I just literally just ran every day because I just thought you can. But I remember, very early on into my running journey, I just went out for a run and I absolutely hated it. I was just, my legs just didn't seem to want to do it. I just couldn't focus. I just thought, what is going on? I thought I must be coming down with a bug of some sort. And went home on utility, and then I read up and it was, you've got to take these rest days. These rest days are very important, especially at the start of your running journey, because your body's not used to it. So it has to slowly build and build and build, hasn't it? So, yeah.
Definitely.
It destroyed me completely, that. Yeah. And I nearly fell out of love with running very early on because I thought, if this is how it feels every time, I don't really want to do it. But it was only educating myself on the recovery days. I thought, right, that's what it is. It's not the running. So I can carry on enjoying.
Yeah. And, I usually say that, we're the sum of our parts. And it's not just the running that we do a few times per week. It's also the other life that's going on, work, sleep, stress, family, other commitments, other interests. We're the sum of all that. And that has to be taken into account as well. Perhaps you have small children, your sleep is not that good, and then you can't expect to perform as well as compared to someone who's perhaps younger, single, don't have any kids, don't have any other commitments. It's just, which makes it very, very difficult to compare. The running is a very comparable sport because of the metrics and the numbers, right? But it's a thing that you really should try to avoid, because we all live different lives. Our life situations look differently. We have lots of different times at our disposal, et cetera, et cetera. So you shouldn't really compare that much, although I know how difficult it is, of course, not do it.
So your children are obviously a bit older now, but how did you balance running with family life and your career when they were younger? How did you integrate running into your daily life without becoming a burden to them?
Looking back at it now, I can be sort of a little bit amazed by how committed I was, 10 years ago. Going out for a 30-kilometer long run at 6 a.m. on a wintry morning, just to be back at age 30, having breakfast with the rest of the family. That would seem very hard to take. I think over time, I've sort of had different solutions. When I was office based, I usually had taken runs during lunch breaks. I have had periods in my life where I've been able to sort of running to and or from the office, scheduling the long rounds really, really early during the weekends, going out before the families got up, so to say. But it's always, been important to me to lessen the impact on my family life from my running. So, my wife also likes to work out, although she doesn't enjoy running. So we allow ourselves time for that.
Yeah, you need that as a couple as well, I think.
Definitely. Yeah. We become happier, healthier parents, and perhaps, hopefully, a bit of role models to our kids as well, showing them it's important to have an active and healthy lifestyle. But I think, when the kids were small, maybe I went for a run when they had gone to sleep. Nowadays, I can go for a run when my work day is finished and really before anyone else is home. So they don't really notice that I've been out running. But before that, then I come home and make dinner, etc. And then the rest of the family, etc. So it's looked different throughout different periods, I think.
Yeah, that's a commitment as well. Like running to work and doing a full day's work. I mean, I could never do that. I could never do that. I mean, what sort of lengths were you talking there when you were commuted?
Well, maybe some. I remember having one work. Then I had about 9 miles or 14 kilometers to work. So then I maybe ran one direction.
Wow. So you just drive. Okay.
<That's> yeah. So, but it's certainly, it also, you know, it adds a bit of logistics, you know, bringing clothes and you must be able to take a shower, etc.
Yeah, cool.
Eating a second breakfast in front of you at your desk, because I have to eat something before I run. I'm not the kind of guy that can run on an empty stomach, so to say.
Yeah, well, that's what I've looked at before, where I'm very much, I need to eat before. I'm not too concerned after straight away, because obviously you're still in that burning phase, aren't you, of losing calories. So yeah, it's definitely at the start, I can't go on an empty stomach. I just don't feel fueled. I just feel straight away that I know I've not eaten, and I feel like I've not got it in me to do it. Yeah, so that's tough for me. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm the kind of guy that's always hungry, so eating for me isn't really a problem.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, don't we all? I mean, God, if I didn't have my wife, I think I'd be eating every hour of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eat, run.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's absolutely brilliant. So looking to the future then, as you look ahead, what does running mean to you now?
Yeah, that's a good question. Hopefully, you know, the way I look at it now, I don't really see an end to my running, or that I would stop completely. But you know, I hope it will be with me for as long as I want to and my body wants to. It motivates me to sort of still keep a certain level for as long as I can. I'm hoping to be here and, you know, grow old together when running and still get out there. Maybe there will be a day where I just enjoy running for health and, you know, get out 2 to 3 times a day over per week just and jog, but I'm not there yet. I still enjoy setting goals, training towards those goals, etc. So in the short term, or maybe within the next 10 years or so, I really see myself training the way I do now. And then we'll see, wow. I guess, what happens. Then we'll see what happens.
The mind's always strong, isn't it? The mind's always strong, but it's the body that lets us down. So it's like, you know, if the knees go and then, you know, it just, you've got to call it a day. But
yeah, I've been fortunate, you know, during my running career, so to say, I haven't really been suffering from any major injuries. Initially, you know, I had a shin splint, so I had the runner's knee, etc., that most people get because they start to run too much. But the only more severe running injury I had was back in 2015 when I had to take a break of about 6 weeks because I got an overstrained hamstring tendon in the back of my thigh. So I had to see some therapist for that. And I did some cycling and I did some strength training. But apart from that, I've been really fortunate to not have any longer breaks from running, whether it be to motivation or injuries.
Right. So, okay. Now, yeah. I found out it was today actually that it's the reason the tendons strain and things like that is because the muscles grow. So the tendons don't grow, do they? So it's, it goes.
No, they don't. Muscle. Yeah.
So yeah. As your legs get bigger, they get tighter. So if you're not stretching correctly, you're going to end up with an injury. That's basically, isn't it? Yeah,
that might be case. I just found myself. I had pain in the back of my thigh. Also, when I was not running, it just got worse and worse there back in 2015. So I had to see a therapist and do something about it and get some treatment for it.
Yeah. So with the runner's knee, because obviously I'm new to running, so I've not experienced that there. And obviously the people we're trying to get listening to the podcast really are new runners. So I mean,
yeah.
How do you know you've got a runner's knee? What's this feel like? Where is it? What's the sort of pain you feel? Why is it called runner's knee?
Yeah. Runner's knee, there's a bit of a language thing here because I think runner's knee in English might be something a little bit different.
Is it?
What we translate to runner's knee in Swedish, but my version of runner's knee is a pain on the outside of the knee, just slightly below the knee. And that's because there is this very large tendon that goes from the outside of the hip, and it attaches just below the knee.
Yeah, it begins with a P, doesn't it?
The iliotibial band, or ITB. Right. So it's called the ITB syndrome, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that becomes irritated, at least, and it's just, you know, painful to run.
So you could use, obviously, I mean, the best thing for that is probably the tape nowadays, isn't it? You get the nice the surgical physio tape, don't you? Which is quite good.
You can use that, and there are some specific stretches that you can do.
And it also
I think it's linked to a little bit how you run. If you're a heavy heel striker, for instance, there's a lot more impact on your knee and your hip as compared to if you're landing more midfoot while striking the foot to the ground.
So did you use any sort of app, or did you use Garmin to help you with your running form? Because I'm starting to see a lot of people saying that they were running wrong for a number of years, and that's why they ended up damaging certain parts where. I just saw you run and you run. I didn't really know there was a form to running, but there is. So
initially, I didn't really care about it either. I just ran.
Yeah.
And as running has become a bit of an interest of mine, I've taken more classes. I've read more about it. Obviously, been blogging about it for 15 years. You learn stuff. But I remember in the very early days that I actually used. If it was a metronome or if I just displayed the seconds on my watch. And I tried to take 3 steps per every second, because there is this myth that you're supposed to take 100 steps per minute because that's what the elite runners are doing.
Yeah.
That's not entirely true, but the most recreational runners run with a little bit of a too low cadence. And the too low cadence often means that you get a lot of impact.
Mm.
You take too long strides, you get a lot of impact on your wrists and your knees and your hips. So I increased my cadence a little bit by just counting the second spacing, counting my steps per second.
Right, okay.
Back in the early days, yeah.
Yeah, and do you incorporate strength training as well into running now? Do you go to the gym? Do you do things like that? Like I use kettlebells quite a lot for, leg work, glute squats, or just to strengthen the legs. Is that something you do?
That's something that I should be doing, right?
Yeah.
I'm and especially as I grow older, I'm 53 years old in a couple of months, and I've heard so many times, and I did a 3D, this motion metrics video analysis of my running technique a while ago, and we did some really detailed breakdown of what my running looked like. And overall, it looked good. But he said to me, because there were some asymmetries, I was a little bit stronger on my left side as compared to my right side, and he said, I think you should do some strength training. And I know that, but over the years, I've never been able to do that consistently. Yes, I do some strength training. When I come over run, I do some bodyweight exercises. I have a couple of kettlebells, but I very, very rarely, visit the gym to go strength training only, which is something that I should consider. I think actually that instead of running maybe 5 times a week that I do now, maybe I should run 4 times a week and do strength training once a week. I don't think I would be a worse runner if I did that, but I still do this mental error of thinking a strength training session is a lost opportunity to run. And as long as I think like that, strength training won't happen, right?
And it is very important. I mean, it's really helped me. A lot of people that I speak to as well, it's got them running for longer, and as they age, they're still running. And I think, that is the part.
I really must consider, getting some kind of routine. Because both my sons, they go to the gym regularly. They are 18 and 23, and they know a lot about what I should be doing. So why don't I just go with them? Because every winter, I usually run outside, but in the winter, in Sweden, there's cold and there's snow and there's slippery streets. So then I go to the gym to go treadmill running and run intervals. So I am in the gym in the wintertime. Mm. Why not just skip a couple of intervals and do some lifting instead, right?
I mean, I hate it. I hate it. I can't think of anything worse than going into a gym and lifting something heavy. It's not my element.
And I'm the same. And I think part of the explanation is as well that I don't really know what to do.
No.
With running, I know exactly what I should do. If I'm training for a 5K, a 10K, or half marathon or whatever, I know exactly what types of workouts I should be doing.
Yeah.
Going into the gym, you know, I pull there a little bit, I lift that thing a little bit, but how many reps should I do? How many sets? I have no clue. And that is also why I feel lost. I don't know where to begin.
Yeah. This bar, that bar, that weight, this machine, there's
yeah,
this,
yeah.
Much. It can be quite intimidating when you go in there sometimes, because
it can.
I think as a man as well, yeah. it's always known that men go to the gym, so it's very like you as a man, you should know how to do that. And I go in and I'm in there for seconds and I'm out. Running trainers are on and I'm gone.
And I'm the same. And I mean I lift the few times that I do lift. I don't lift heavy at all, as compared to what all the other guys are doing. Maybe that feels tough as well. I'm really not strong in that classical sense. Mm-hmm. That I lift very heavy, not at all.
Yeah, and that's why I brought the kettlebells, because the kettlebells it's really good functional strength training where you really focus on your core, which is good for running, and obviously your legs. And I really enjoy that because I'm in the peace of my own home doing it. And all you need is a box, basically, to do some of these exercises to lift. And I enjoy that. But you put me in a gym and no, that's it. You turn around and I'd be gone.
Yeah. No, and I think in general, you know, people, including myself, are lazy. We want to do what we are comfortable, you know, doing. And I'm comfortable running, so that's why I stick to running. But I mean, it would probably take me less than 5 minutes to go on YouTube and type in, you know, strength training for runners in the search bar, and I would get this program. Do these five exercises.
Yeah, easily. Yeah.
And I would get a program, and I could do that once a week or twice a week. It would be easy, but it just doesn't happen.
Yeah. Yoga is a good one as well. Yoga for me.
Yeah.
I've started to get into that. And that is actually really enjoyable.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, again, I just thought, no, that's something guys wouldn't do. And, you know, I've started it. I'm on to about day 21 of it. And it's fascinating. It's fascinating how that's helped me more flexible in my running, especially stretching where, you know, with your groin and your back, you're strengthening your core. So maybe instead of the gym, get some yoga, try a bit of yoga.
I've only tried that a couple of times, and obviously it's also, you know, depressing because you're stiff as a board, right?
Yeah.
So
people bend in half, and I just bend like as an L shape.
Exactly. So you kind of, I'm really bad at this. And so instead of thinking I should do it more, I don't do it at all.
Yeah.
Which is another example of thinking in the wrong way. So
yeah.
But running for sure, running is good for many things, but it's not that great for flexibility, right?
No, but practice makes perfect, as they say. So I'm sure there was one point when you thought, no, I'm not going to be good at this running, but look at you now.
Yeah. We'll see, but strength training is definitely on the to-do list a little bit more than it has been, because I think it is important. And I think it is important to because you lose muscle mass as you grow older, and just for the injury prevention, because if I want to continue run the way I do, I think I must incorporate a bit more strength training going forward.
Yeah, that's solid for me as well. So just finally, really, because I've asked everyone, and you know, it's something that I love people to share. So what advice would you give to brand new runners when they're first starting out?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the general advice is be very, very patient. I see a lot of people start to run and expecting fast results. And they often end up injured and they stop running. So have a really long-term perspective on your running. Don't expect to be your best in 6 months, maybe not even next year, but to try to have as long of a perspective as you can think of, because if you're able to do that, if you're able to just, first of all, I think you must just create a habit, and I think that takes to, you know, 4 to 6 weeks or something.
It does,
like
that's right,
because you must teach your brain that this is something that you should do regularly.
Mm.
And so just create that habit and just stick to that habit for quite a while before thinking of changing much.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I mean, and it does. It's initially getting past that first part. Once you pass that first part and you start to see those slight improvements, it becomes really enjoyable. You know, and like I said, there's so many places where you don't have to run alone. And what I'm finding is the running community are very, very welcoming, and it's not a case of I'm better than you. It's they know how you feel because they've been there, and they know how that start of that journey feels and how downhearted it can get if you don't feel like you're getting faster. But yeah, not to worry about the pace, just enjoy nature, enjoy the run.
I mean, the extra difficult or challenging things with running is perhaps that it takes a while before it gets enjoyable. I think for very new runners, it is a struggle, and they seem like they have to walk for it to be enjoyable. But then do the walking and start jogging 100 meters and do that 5 times 1 minute, and then you're able to jog a little bit more and you take it from there. So take it very, very slowly. And you finally will come to the day when you actually enjoy going for a run. But it takes time, but it's so worth it once you arrive there. Yeah. But again, I mean, I can just, you know, seem going for a run with my club. There are people in my club that runs the 10K in 30 minutes, but there are also people in my club that runs the 10K in 60 minutes. And we, you know, we all warm up and cool down together, and we talk to each other, and everyone can share that feeling of, you know, working on the same effort, although the pace is so very different comparing these runners. So everyone shares the same experience, talks to each other, cheers for each other, etc. So it is just a very
free therapy, isn't it? Free therapy,
yeah.
Really.
yeah, absolutely.
So if people obviously want to follow you on your following your journey on running, where are we? What socials are we on? Are we on Instagram, things like that?
I am on Instagram at Dahlgren Staffan, so that my name reversed, so to say, my last name first.
Yeah, okay, cool. So what I will, when we post it out anyway, I'll put a link on there for your username so people can have a look at your journey.
I'm also on Strava for any runners if they want to learn. They better take a Swedish lesson before they follow me there if they want to understand what I write. But
it's modern now. We've all got Translate. We can use Translate. Yeah, I'll definitely give you a follow. I'll give you a follow.
That's great.
That's not my
primary. I have my training journal since 2007 on another Swedish website. I'm also in Strava because I found a lot of people are. So it's also a nice way to connect with people.
It is. I've really enjoyed it because I joined a slow running club on Strava. So just because I wasn't fast. and they are great. Now I'm getting to the stage where I'm a bit too fast for it. So I've sort of left it, but I've made some good friends on there. I've met some really nice people, and you know, even if I am faster now, they're still cheering each other on. So it's great. It's great.
That component of running can't really be underestimated because it's so important, you know, to have people to connect with and to, you know, to run with or to just talk running with, because the family, you know, they don't always understand, you know, the euphoria of coming home after a race or a great training run, or They don't understand how miserable one can feel after a bad run. So then it's easy to help. Then it's nice to have like-minded people to talk to.
I agree. Yeah. But it's been lovely to speak to you, Stefan.
Very nice talking to you, Jamie.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'm definitely going to follow you on Strava as soon as we're done. Keep inspiring me with your stories. I'll tag you in all the socials so people can follow your journey. It'll also be on the paceyourselfpodcast.com website and also on the socials of Instagram Threads. And we'll be showing it on Spotify, Apple, Amazon Music, and the regular podcasting streams. Okay.
Thank you, Jamie.
Brilliant. All right. You take care.